This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Free your mind.
Sex worker, and yes, it does. In those biblical sense, I am beyond repentance. Ben Hooker, sex worker, wench, thou makes her mind. Listen up close while I take it backwards. Oh, God, begins the gal that's in me, which I want. I'm not a prostitute. Sex workers, but I can give you what you want. Sex worker, damn it. Go
get some. You've tuned in to the Vixen Hour. Sex workers setting the record straight on Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. Red Umbrella Radio.
You have tuned into the Vixen Hour. The Vixen Hour is your weekly radio show that explores life, issues and the world from a sex worker's perspective. This is your opportunity to challenge the stereotypes and prejudice that you may have about sex workers and hear from the actual voices of sex workers ourselves. We are out loud and proud. This is the only community radio program in the world that is both publicly broadcasted to your radios and available online that is 100% produced and presented by sex workers. Turn it up.
All discussions presented on Vixen Hour are made in the interest of community information and are not intended to induce any individual to seek employment in the sex industry. For more information in this area, we recommend individuals to get in contact with their local sex work organisation. The Vixen Hour. Everyone has an opinion about sex work. Make yours an informed one.
Joy 94.9.
If you would like to interact with the program at all, at any point throughout the show, you can send us a text message on 0427-JOY949. That's 0427-569-949. Sending us an email at onair@joy.org.au or giving Robert at the front desk a call on 1300-JOY949. That's 1300-569-949. And we thank him for being there as our program support, a really valuable role.
Yay!
And joining me in the studio is the fabulous Gallivanting.
Thank you. Lovely to be here once again on the Vixen Hour.
Fantastic. And on tonight's program, we are talking about an interesting topic, a controversial topic.
It's controversial.
I think so.
I'm anxious because it's such a fraught topic.
Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's attempt to unpack it. The thing that we've decided to talk about tonight is money.
Cash.
Money. and how that plays out in, I guess, the roles and lives of sex workers, what it does, what it means for us, the ways that it has been portrayed, the ways people think money interacts with us. There's a lot of sort of myths and stereotypes about money, so I think we'll have the opportunity to talk about those as well as talk about, you know, the different ways that money performs different functions in our day-to-day jobs.
And in our clients' lives as well.
Absolutely. Mm. And, you know, what is the value of things? Fraught topic. And I think quite often when people think about sex workers and sex work, they think of people who are in quite often desperate or dire situations where they've had to give up something to do sex work, or they're giving up something for the money.
And that it's a last resort.
Mm. And I think it's a bit unfair to think that only applies to sex workers.
Absolutely.
Because I think, as we've sort of found in lots of discussions during the Vixen Hour, is the stuff that people think of when they think of sex workers actually applies to a lot of other people in a lot of other roles. So we thought we might tackle that stereotype of, you know, giving up stuff to do sex work, or giving up, you know, being desperate or whatever for the money, by actually doing a little vox pop and asking people, well, what have you given up for your job? Here's what they had to say. I do want to say thank you to the many people who took part in this vox pop. It was pretty fun. This is what they had to say.
I
Not really much because I'm a pretty bad employee, so I've given up work for a lot of other fun things. Yeah, no, that's about it.
I work in a nightclub, so I gave up daylight and having friends. Friends that aren't high.
Okay, so what I did was I've decided to put my career ahead of everything. So I guess ahead of my personal life, including family and relationships. So what I've done is I've hopped from town to town to town to country to another town in the aim of just getting ahead and getting my life goal. So yeah, I've basically put a lot on the line for what I hope will be an amazing job opportunity when it pops up.
I think I've given up a social life. Just so much work on, not getting out enough, which is probably why I'm single.
Fun. I work in IT. It's a little bit, can be a little bit boring.
I've given up sleep for my job. Getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to radio on time is exhausting, but it's fun. Radio, not getting up early.
I've probably given up too many hours of spending quality time with my partner, and I am sometimes reminded of that. Sometimes.
I had to give up a girlfriend for work, or more to the fact I moved overseas, and then things are very tricky when it's long distance and so stuff fell apart. And I also had to give up chocolate because I was eating too much because I was living in Switzerland.
My health and fitness sometimes, particularly when I start a new project, I get too busy, I don't eat right and I don't exercise, and it's always a really hard road back.
What I've given up for my job, money. I worked for the government, I was on a very cushy wage, and I decided I wanted to do something that I really wanted to do for the first time in my life, and I did, but that meant giving up money.
I think what I've given up for work and have done for many years is a good salary because I choose to do community work. I'm also a journalist by trade. I like doing work that benefits people and is good work, but it also means I don't have financial security, but that's fine because that's a choice we make, and I'd rather be happy doing my work than being poor.
I think one thing that I've given up is my relationship with like people and family because I work in PR and marketing, so I'm always at events or up early or running around somewhere, so I can't make birthdays or, you know, family functions and things like that, and I can't have a serious relationship because I'm never at home.
I don't give anything up for work. I put things that make me happy first.
Aww. That was a fun little vox pop.
I really like it. Every time I listen to it, new things come up for me.
So there were a few things in there. What were the things that sort of stuck out for you?
Well, I think the one that kind of just came through was that people give up very basic human needs like sleep or community or contact with family, their health, and there's the, you know, for some sex workers, certainly not all, those are things that are actually enabled through the work that they do because the what they earn allows them more time to address those things, or because perhaps part of what they do to prepare themselves for sex work has to do with their health.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's built in.
Absolutely. And I think certainly what I heard, because there was a nice diverse range of voices, is that people make this choice to do the work that they do for a whole range of reasons. So sometimes people actually will make the choice to give up, you know, a good salary in order to do what they believe in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really nice thing. I think that's and I can relate to that. And that's a lot of the reason why I do sex work is because, like, I spend a lot of time doing community-based work. I also spend a lot of time volunteering and sort of to enable me to have, a comfortable life that I want and to enable things like traveling and other stuff as well. That's why I do sex work. It's sort of this interesting thing around, you know, people making choices and decisions and what are those values that are related to your work and money. I think they're really interesting things to come out in that spot.
And the question of your labor, whether it has another significance or another value besides the income or the exchange that you earn monetarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And lots of people are kind of saying, you know, I do at least, you know, sort of half of why they do their work is about what it gives them the way it nourishes them on an intellectual, spiritual, whatever level. And I think that's true of sex work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, certainly sex workers choose to do sex work for a whole range of reasons.
Absolutely.
Whether it is sort of enabling those things like time with family, or interestingly, one of the things that sort of comes up and that a lot of sex workers can relate to is giving up relationships for work as well. And, you know, sort of seeing that as, I don't know, sometimes when I see, when I hear people talk about that, with regards to sex work, it's like it's this massive thing. It's this thing, this big sacrifice that sex workers do. But really, lots of people do that.
That's it's so overwhelmingly common. And if you read any sort of like, you know, relationship self-help literature or anything like that, you see how very work-oriented our culture is and how the work ethic has affected that and the cost to personal relationships that, that comes all across the board. And often... the people represented in those types of books are not sex workers. So that goes to show you that everyone's doing it.
And really that sex work isn't that different to any other job in terms of, you know, measuring things up of like, you know, what am I doing? What am I prepared to trade off? What am I doing this job for? What are the what are the factors that are driving that choice? I think when we talk about money and particularly things that people have to give up for their work, sex work isn't that different to any job. And I think that's what that vox pop sort of demonstrates.
It's a calculated choice.
Absolutely. What do you think? What have you given up for your job? You can text in on 0427 569 949. Join in the conversation, just like Scotty has. Hello, Christian and Gala Vanting. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you, Scotty. Good to hear your voice again, Christian. Cheers, Scotty. Thank you for your message. It's good to read your words.
I just get excited when a thing comes through for us.
Look, I find it exciting. So, yes, if you wanted to text in just as Scotty has, 0427 569 949. We've got to go to some messages now, but when we come back, we're going to look at some more of those myths around sex work and money. You're on the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Katie Underwood, and I tune into Joy 94.9 because I think it's beautiful, beautiful, yeah. It's so beautiful, beautiful.
Ah. You are here on the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9. The time is 9:15. You're with Gala Vanting and Christian, and we are talking all about sex work and money.
Money,
money, money. Makes the world go round, apparently. Pays the bills.
That and some other things.
Feeds the kids. Buys shoes.
You know. Especially purple velvet clogs.
Oh, money. So there's a lot of myths and stereotypes around sex work and money.
Aren't there just?
Aren't there. Did you want to pick one?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that we can cover a lot of ground with the idea that for sex workers, they are either totally rolling in it, like literally sleeping on their cash, or they are so desperate that they are, you know, completely hand to mouth and, you know, Pover. So that we have this kind of deeply polarized opinion.
And there is sort of two ends of that scale. So I think the stereotype that sex workers are rolling in it, I think it comes from people, like usually for a transaction, an hour-long transaction, people imagine that sex workers are being paid, you know, a relatively high amount of money when you compare it to other jobs per hour.
Yeah, in the likes of, you know, lawyers and CEOs and, you know, these types.
Yeah. When not actually, as much as some CEOs.
There are clients.
But because people sort of see that big figure attached to your per hour rate, they think you're earning lots of money.
Right. With no thought whatsoever to what it actually might involve, the number of hours that might be involved in that single hour of work.
Yeah.
And also no consideration for what your lifestyle might actually be like. Perhaps you're a parent and you work one night a week when your kids are at soccer or something like this. You know, we have this, we don't evaluate it with a very clear picture.
Yeah. And I mean, you might be receiving a certain amount of money per hour, but that's hour of service delivery.
Right.
You're not counting hours of things like putting together an ad, you know, or driving or
preparation.
Waxing, going to the gym.
Yep.
All of that stuff that you do to prepare for sex work, you actually don't get paid for. So when you sort of break it down, if you sort of like count all of those hours versus what you are getting paid for, you know, for your per hour rate, it actually doesn't work out to be that much more than a lot of other people.
Yeah, like most things that I do in my life, I try not to think about the breakdown of like hours worked per dollar earned.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would just depress me. Yeah. And that would defeat the purpose of my work.
And I think the other thing is, like, you might charge per hour and you might, like, do an hour job, but it's not like we work a 9-to-5 where you work 8 hours straight.
Right.
And you get paid for every single one of those hours.
Mm-hmm.
So you might work 2 or 3 hours within an 8 hour block, and suddenly that seems like, you know, that the amount you earn is comparable to a few other professions.
Yeah. And look, I mean, there are definitely people who do have this, but just in my general sphere, I know few sex workers who work 40 hours per week.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, who have actual working contact time of 40 hours per week.
And then there is the other end of the scale. And I think it totally illustrates that whenever we do talk about money, that we are talking about class.
Yes, we are.
And different class structures that workers are active in. And the other end of the spectrum is, you know, if sex workers aren't rolling in it, sex workers are skint, broke, desperate, can't hang on to money, are throwing it out away, it's disposable to them.
Yeah.
It's not very valuable. And I think that's another stereotype.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think comes from this stereotypes about sex workers being drug addicts or otherwise criminals, or, you know, there's so many, I guess, other associations that we make with the career of sex work or the occupation of sex work. And it's that people collapse them altogether because, you know, because they don't bother to find out any alternative viewpoints.
Yeah. And I think it's this interesting thing around, you know, thinking that sex isn't worth that much or that a person has devalued sex.
Right.
If they're going to sell it.
Yes.
I find that interesting, that moral judgment interesting, because when I think of people who aren't sex workers and, well, what they trade or not trade for sex.
Oh, yeah.
It suddenly doesn't seem that valuable.
Right, to
other people.
Yeah.
But there's this judgment that sex workers cheapen sex somehow.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about that?
Well, look, I mean, for me, it's deeply connected to slut shaming and general whorephobia. But, you know, I guess there's also this kind of Puritan idea about the sacredness of sex and the purity of sex and this, you know, that it belongs only in the context of a loving relationship, and you know, so we have these kind of Judeo-Christian values coming into it as well. And again, you know, these things to me are poorly informed and kind of lazy judgment.
And there's a level of hypocrisy there, because how often are things like marriage connected to things like money? Like, you know,
absolutely.
And you know,
it's
people
just high class prostitution. You know,
according to some radical feminists. They've even written whole books on that.
Yes, Are you listening?
So yeah, I find that fascinating that like people can and people consider sort of sex workers' money to be very different to other people's money.
Yes, it's the dirty money.
Yeah.
Yes, the money with all the jizz on it. That's the only dirty bit. But what you did bring up, what, I want to speak to this point of the fact that we're talking about class, and so that. When we talk about that, we can only speak about that from our own personal positions and histories in regards to class. So I think it's important, you know, for me, for example, to acknowledge that I come from a lower middle class background and that I'm white and I am a recipient of government benefits and that, you know, I have a certain level of, you know, class mobility. But I guess I also have, I have a very fraught relationship with class and with kind of moving between lower middle class and upper lower class. So this kind, this personal history informs for me very much, you know, what I say about money and class and my relationship to that.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, equally, I sort of acknowledge that, you know, my background is very much having experienced periods of homelessness and dependent drug use and street-based sex work with no sort of safety nets of, mm-hmm. you know, having parents or mm-hmm. People who are willing to bail me out, but also acknowledging that I've been extraordinarily privileged in that I've found the opportunities or worked for, you know, a lot of it is privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have worked really hard, but a lot of it I do acknowledge is of having opportunities to do things like enter the community health workforce, mm-hmm. for example, and being able to achieve a level of class mobility that way. Mm-hmm. That's sort of my background. Mm. I think we come from different spaces that
definitely
do inform each of our perspectives. So, I think it's fascinating. Thank you for sharing.
Mm. Thank you.
You are on the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Joy 94.9. The time is 29 minutes past 9. And you are listening to the Vixen Hour with Christian and Gala Vanting. Hi. Mm-hmm.
Hi.
We are talking all about sex work and money.
Money.
Oh, goodness.
The reason we do it.
Among other things.
Yeah. So I thought we might talk about like the different ways money plays out in different forms of sex work. Mm. So diverse. Oh, isn't it?
Yep.
And like I'm remembering, like I sort of said earlier, I started off doing street-based sex work, and that transaction looks very different to how, well, not that different, but it's a little bit different.
It looks quite different. And the worker's actual involvement with the money is very different in street-based sex work than it is, for example, in a house, in a brothel, or perhaps in a strip club. Or a peep show.
So I might start with street-based sex work, and then we'll talk about different examples of how money's handled. So when I did street-based sex work, and certainly what was the general practice at the time, was street-based sex workers would negotiate with clients at the window. Like, so usually somebody would drive up, a window would roll down, and you speak to a client through that window. You negotiate things like services and prices, where you go, and it's all very straightforward that way. And as soon as you get into the car, you get the money before you even leave that spot where you encountered them. Mm-hmm. And that was more of a safety thing. So, like, it's like, you've got the money, it's secure, we can go off and do whatever. Usually, in that situation, I would do things like put it in a secure spot, often not in my wallet because, you know, it's kind of a security thing for me.
Yeah,
you'd go off, do a service, and then the client would drive you back. Mm-hmm. And that's how the money played out there. And it was, interestingly, during street-based sex work, it's probably the only form of sex work I've done where you negotiate money per service. So while other forms of sex work, you'll price time. So you price per hour or per half hour.
That's inclusive of a certain set of activities.
Yeah. So usually that is like, so you have like three prices, oral, anal, or both. Mm-hmm. That's how sort of the pricing structure played out for street-based sex work. Well, when I was doing it, and certainly in having conversations with people who still do street-based sex work, that's very much a norm of how that's practiced.
Which is very interesting because you're monetizing an act in and of itself. And so that has a certain tone to it, and you know, the sort of all-inclusive package where I don't have to negotiate act by act with you, from the client's perspective, it has a very different feel. And I think, you know, clients fetishize both of those things. And then when you look at for example, professional BDSM or fetish work, there are certain things that are included as part of a session, and then there are other things that often are surrounding particular fetishes that extend beyond that.
As somebody who's done professional domination BDSM work, so there's like a retainer or a standard fee?
Essentially, yeah. So it's a fee for your time. Mm-hmm. And your time would include, often a worker sets their own boundaries about what the time includes. Mm-hmm. Occasionally the house will also make suggestions or, you know, perhaps try to enforce that you include certain things. So for example, if, you know, for me, a client can receive a single golden shower in a session. Mm-hmm. If the client would like an extra golden shower, he would have to pay me, he or she would have to pay me extra for that, you know, for the this, and we call them extras like you do in other types of sex work, but often they are, you know, they can be sexual and they can also just be fetishistic and revolve around, you know, a certain, yes, bodily fluid or type of play or, you know, something that you have to have extra equipment for example.
Yeah. Mm. And in that situation, you're talking about a house and that, you know, so we're talking about like a staffed brothel, like having a receptionist or a manager at the front desk. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of brings into the discussion the role of third parties. Mm-hmm. So besides the sex worker and the client, there might be somebody else who is handling the money, if you like.
Who actually takes it from the client. And there's that's a very interesting, you know, from a class perspective, I think it's a very interesting scenario because the client is not directly handing cash to a person who is going to give him a sexual service. So there's this degree of removal that takes place because there is this third party.
Yeah.
And, you know, based on, in my experience, the clientele is extremely classist.
Yeah.
And having that buffer is an absolute must for them to even enjoy the service because there is a stigma around paying for sex. Mm-hmm. There's a stigma around you know, paying itemized prices for things, extras. This whole the whole thing is quite, you know.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because now working as a private worker, often there's a couple of different approaches to the money. So if I'm doing an out call like I have to here in Victoria, I will do things like count the money in front of the client just to reinforce that this is a business transaction.
Yes.
You know, it's very much this is a professional setting. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, though, when I work in a different state where I'm allowed to work from my own premises, I do things like I'll collect the money, but then I'll walk out with it.
Mm.
So I actually remove the money from the space that the session happens in.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I can't do that if I'm doing an out call.
Right.
And part of I'm not sure what that's about. So I guess I get a sense that, you know, keeping the money on me, making it a very professional thing, is a way of asserting myself in an environment that isn't very familiar if I'm doing an out call, so being going to the client's premises. Whereas if I am in control of the premises, what I'm trying to do is make it as welcoming as possible.
Mm.
So there are these like different competing priorities depending on, I guess, the modality within which you're doing sex work.
Mm.
And when we put together the show, I was like sort of thinking about, you know, all the different ways I treat money and how it's different depending on things like my sense of safety, my familiarity with the workplace.
Mm-hmm. And also the comfort of the client and what's going to, what's going to work for them. And I've definitely seen some clients who, even just the mere mention of rates or extras prices, that kind of stuff, draws them out of the experience, and they refuse to kind of engage with that part of it, which I think is super fascinating,
isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, I want to ask clients what their sort of their perspective would be. That's so another show.
I often think this with the Vixen Hour. I think, what about getting the clients to call in? We need their perspectives too.
Yeah, no, maybe that can, we can organize that in the future. You are in the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9. If you would like to stay connected to the Vixen Hour all throughout the week, you can do so by liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/sexworkerradio. Lots of good information. We'll often post extra information and questions and stuff on that page. So, but yeah, be really good to be connected to you via social media.
And I'm going to post something there now, actually. I'm going to post Cash Kitty, which is a Tumblr involving cats and money, both belonging to sex workers. It's a really incredible little piece of work.
Amazing. Amazing. You should go to that Facebook page, facebook.com/sexworkerradio, just to like that. It'll be totally worth it.
Cats. cash. How could you not love it?
And sex workers. Amazing. You are on the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9.
A voice for sex workers. The Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9. The time is 17 minutes to 10. You're joined with Christian and Gala Vanting.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hi.
We are talking all about sex work and money. And I think, I mean, we've sort of gotten a few personal stories from both Gala Vanting and I.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought we might talk a little bit more about our sort of personal approaches to money. And and I think sort of one of the things that that accents this conversation was today I actually went to a bank where I had a credit card that I wanted to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just done, you know, a big stint of sex work that sort of gathered me a small pile of money that was enough to close a credit card account.
Great.
That I had for a while.
How good does that feel?
Oh my God. There's such a level of achievement. And the thing was, I put like this pile of money in front of this bank teller at this unnamed bank. And I said, do you know how much cock I had to suck to get that pile of money? 41 inches all in my face. And I kind of did feel like, yes, done.
Yeah.
And I mean, how do non-sex workers do it?
They don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
No.
No, they just hand over the money. It's not as exciting, is it?
No. But this kind of goes to sort of debunk the whole, you know, sex workers don't have financial goals. They don't do things like financial planning.
Yeah.
And that it's a, you know, you spend it as you get it because it's cash, you know, and you can't manage cash, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And
or easy come, easy go.
Yeah, yeah.
All of those kind
and
of things.
And here you are paying off your credit card.
I know, weird.
Good on you.
How grown up am I?
Don't.
So bizarre.
I'll get there someday.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be a big kid like you.
Uh-huh. What about you with money?
Oh, Jesus. Well, look, I mean, to me, I feel like, you know, what we're talking about is our relationship, you know, the relationship between me and sex work and money. It's this triangle it's the Bermuda Triangle. Things go down in there.
Yeah. Ooh, and disappear.
Good pun. Yes.
Yeah.
Disappear for moments. Sometimes forever.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I guess for me, I do a lot of things with my time which are not, which do not earn me a living wage.
Mm.
Sex work is one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sex work is, I guess, kind of a it's scattered in amongst a whole bunch of different types of work in the sex industry, from image making and filmmaking, mm-hmm. to education and outreach, mm-hmm. to, you know, just basic, you know, sessioning, mm-hmm. sex work sessioning.
Producing community radio.
Also that. and it's always been, I guess, kind of tied in with my class circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a few other jobs that I could have that would allow me to do the things that supplement my other work, like travel, you know, and that's less about money and more about time. So the way that I can parse my time with sex work is really valuable to me.
Mm.
However, I guess like what I often say at the moment is that I am one of the laziest hoes that I know, and that my hustle is not very strong, which I'm hoping to change in the new year. That's my New Year's resolution for, you know, sex work New Year's resolution. And you know, I definitely did come into sex work from a you know, from a background of feeling that it was a better choice for me financially than a lot of the other options I had, such as continuing to develop myself a student loan debt, or, you know, continuing working in academe, mm-hmm. which is an extremely competitive market, and a huge economy of scarcity. And so, so I mean, I guess I definitely have come to it from a perspective of like, I need money. and this is sexuality is something that I know a lot about, that I'm very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, it's a good match, but I definitely have this very, yep, I feel that I have a very complex relationship to these things, and that, you know, sometimes I actually internalize this idea that I am desperate and that I am not employable in other ways, because I don't actually have a university degree, because, you know, because for the last 10 years I have worked in the sex industry.
Yeah.
And so you do start to fall into this space of, you know, yeah, if I wanted to not do this, could I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because certainly in very recent times I've met a number of sex workers, and it is a bit of a running theme as you talk to a bunch of sex workers that they have tried other jobs before they came to sex work.
Yes.
And I mean, again, this is another class of experience where, you know, people have been able to do that. Like, and everyone from, you know, vet nurses to theatre costume designers to... I met a lawyer recently who was like, this is much more aligned to what I want to do personally.
Yeah.
And what my skills are, what my expertise is, what I want to actually put out in the world.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, being able to be valued, that experience to be valued is an extraordinarily positive thing for a number of people.
Yep.
And certainly that's been one that's been extraordinarily positive in my own life, you know, as someone who is very comfortable with my sexuality and having to, I guess, have had to examine what that is, particularly in the context of, look, I'm not white. Mm-hmm. My parents weren't born in Australia. There's this constant questioning around identity, and sexuality certainly played a particular part in that, particularly being queer as well. It's interesting, though, because the whole lazy ho conversation, because I feel like, and perhaps it's a class or a lack of privilege thing, but as a male sex worker, because there is less work out there for me, that my sort of work ethic is, if that phone rings, you answer it. You know, and I am like doing things like answering the phone at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Against my better judgment sometimes I sleep through it,
sure.
But a lot of the times I will answer that phone, and it will be a job that I end up doing like really early in the morning before work or whatever. Yeah, but
yeah, I definitely am lazy. if you are the benchmark, I am
not the benchmark.
No way. I turn my phone off sometimes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, other times not till 10.
Yeah, but it's interesting, like, again, those choices that we make and what we're prepared to trade off.
Yeah, and what we value more, you know, like, in that case, you know, I value my sleep and my, you know, my diurnal rhythms much more than I value the money.
Yeah.
And that is perhaps why I am broke. There's a very good reason for all of this.
Yeah, and why perhaps I am overworked.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I went through a routine once where it's just like, I get up, I do a job, I go for a swim, and then I go to my day job. Like,
yeah.
And I am in bed at 9:30. Yeah.
No, but this falls, you know, this kind of ties back to that discussion about, you know, what you are willing to sacrifice and what you're not.
Yeah.
And also what you have to gain from that sacrifice. You know, like, you need to know that if you're going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you are making X number of dollars.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that would be worth it for me.
Yeah.
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 I do make that call sometimes.
Yeah.
Hmm. There've been very few times where I've said no to particular work. And I think, you know, like, money can't buy you everything.
Yes.
And again, I think it's this sort of stereotype that just because a sex worker is getting paid, that a client can do whatever they want. And
right.
That's not necessarily true.
And just because a sex worker is getting paid, the sex is not real. Mm. Or that the whole... You know, the whole experience is a kind of is a sort of fabrication or a performance of sex rather than a genuine interaction between two people.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is true and sometimes that's not true.
Yeah. And I think different workers approach it in very different ways.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with the money?
Does what have anything to do with
like
the money?
Like the decision to have, like, to, you know, make this a fabrication or a genuine thing?
Well, it's interesting. I think it depends very much what type of sex work you do, where you do it, the other people that you work with, if you do work with anybody else. I think for some people, for some clients, the performance, you know, they expect an experience that looks like porn, for example.
Yeah.
So they do expect a very kind of camp, over the top, you know, high femme kind of persona and sexual experience. And so the performance is monetizable.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to survive in that situation, or to come out on top, or to be competitive.
Yeah.
And then there are other types of work and other types of clientele in which the genuineness, and I use quotes around that, the genuineness of the experience is what they're paying for. And they're very adamant that, you know, that you enjoy what you're doing, regardless of whether, you know, the money is actually your goal there or your priority there. And these are the same kinds of transactions in which the client will shy away from, you know, or tend to shy away from any contact with, you know, this I am making X per hour, you are handing that to me, I am counting it in front of you. These things will you know, make them shy away.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It's so fascinating. And I guess it's kind of playing into both the psychology of both the sex worker and the client.
Yeah.
And often these things are at odds.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly as a worker, I've done a bit of both, like, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, sometimes I feel like doing one, sometimes I feel like, and it's really, and particularly with some clients, you tap into, I guess, a certain dynamic that means you lean either one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
Yeah. And you have to learn what they expect from that.
Yeah.
And you know, the language that you need to use around that. And
yeah.
Yeah. I've worked in, when I kind of started out doing actual, sort of escort work, I started doing it, as a kind of in the sugar daddy realm, you know, like where you go on these websites and you create a profile and that you're not, you know, they are specifically asking you to not be a sex worker, but they are paying you for your companionship, time, sex, whatever.
Yeah.
But there is a huge stigma around, you know, if they wanted to see a sex worker, they would go to a brothel.
Yeah.
You're different, you know. And so often you're paid, often you don't know what you're going to be paid. You have no idea what your working conditions are going to be. People want your real name so that they can transfer money into your bank account, because handling the actual cash is a problem. Yeah. So there's this whole, you know, you're actually providing a sexual service in a context where sex work is not okay.
Amazing.
So fascinating.
There isn't enough time. We've got to go to some messages.
No.
You're in the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9.
I'm Dr. Brooke Mignanti, formerly known as Belle du Jour, and you're listening to the Vixen Hour on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You are on the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9. The time is 3 minutes to 10. Oh, my God.
No.
No, there's never enough time. God damn it. And you always get to the good bit.
The really juicy bit.
Anyway, thank you for joining me for the past hour.
Thanks for having me.
It's been amazing.
It's always nice to be here.
Oh, it's been a really interesting conversation all about sex work and money. I will try to get this podcast up within 48 hours. Oh, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/sexworkerradio, or on Twitter. Our handle is @VixenHour. It would be amazing to be connected to you. You have been with Christian and Gallivanting. This has been the Vixen Hour. You're on Joy 94.9. The time is 2 minutes to 10. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.